WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration prepares professionals to address today's most pressing challenges and offers flexible options with part-time and evening classes to support busy adults balancing complex schedules. Inspire change, shape the future at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. While anyone can get scammed, older adults face much higher fraud losses. Victims over the age of 60 lose $28.3 billion annually to scams or financial abuse. That's according to an AARP report. And older adults are less likely to report these losses. So I sat down with two guests to discuss what you can do to protect yourself or your loved ones from this kind of scam. Leslie McGranahan is the Chicago Federal Reserve Bank's Senior Vice President of Regional Analysis and Community Development. And Peter Lichtenberg is the Director of the Institute of Gerontology at Wayne State University in Michigan. Gerontology is the study of aging. Leslie starts with key ways that elders are defrauded or financially abused.
So elders tend to be more likely to be defrauded by like sort of technology scams. There can also be like scams around shopping and scams around financial transactions more broadly.
Peter, can you weigh in here? How much is this costing the average older adult?
As Leslie was saying, some of the most vulnerable scams that older adults experience are imposter scams, somebody posing as an IRS agent or something similar to that, technology scams, and actually romance scams are really skyrocketing as well, along with the good old-fashioned lottery scams.
Explain romance scams for folks who might not have heard.
Yeah, this is people developing relationships online. They think they have a partner that they are getting to know. And really, it's just a scam. Somebody is posing as somebody that they are not.
Yeah.
And somewhere along the relationship, that person that's scamming them will start asking for money, usually telling them, you know, some kind of story that really tugs at the heartstrings. Mm. And they need money for grandson's treatment or something like that.
Wow. So, Leslie, there's fraud by strangers, but there's also financial abuse by trusted friends and family members. Is that right?
Yeah, they're both types of scams. You know, we've more focused on fraud perpetrated by strangers, but there's also, you know, sort of exploitation by loved ones and close contacts as well.
My goodness. So, I mean, it just feels like it can come from anywhere. Is that right, Peter?
And Sasha, when trusted others exploit an older person, it really has deeper ramifications. Loss of trust, a lot more depression, anxiety, experience of stress, in addition to the loss of funds, which is usually greater when it's a trusted other.
Leslie, ageism can pop up when we have conversations about things like this, right? And people often assume, I'm guilty, I assumed in the past that elders are scammed at higher rates than other people, but that is not necessarily the case. So can you just walk us through that myth?
Yeah, so that is a myth, that everybody is vulnerable to scams. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily true that elders are more likely to be scammed. When they are scammed, they often lose more money. And there are some more intense consequences sometimes for older individuals because they have less time to recoup those losses in the labor market. But no, they're not more likely to be scammed. There's certain types of scams that elder individuals are more targeted by, such as technology scams.
Yeah.
But there are also types of scams that are more concentrated at individuals who are young and in their 20s, like online shopping scams or like work-related scams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's kind of a scam for everybody.
Pretty much, yeah. And who is actually most vulnerable in this age group, Peter? Because we talk about how this is all on the rise for folks over 60, but there's a particular age group that this seems to happen more often to.
Absolutely, Sasha. So within the older adult population, you have subgroups that are definitely more vulnerable to scams and exploitation. People with memory loss, significant memory loss, even early memory loss. People who are lonely and have a lot of psychological vulnerability around depression, anxiety, more isolated. People who are starting to become more physically dependent on others because of illness and disability. Mm-hmm. And fourth, one of the groups that gets targeted a lot are widows and widowers, people who are grieving. And scammers are so good at learning who these folks are and then targeting them.
Wow. What are the limits to data about reported fraud? I mean, do we have any sense of how much is being reported and just how much goes unreported?
So there are ways to report and there are data that is collected, but often, you know, individuals who are scammed have some shame and are slow to, you know, unwilling or slow to report. Report the scams. And so there are real limitations to the data that are out there. One of the things that we could use more of is just really good data and kind of reducing that stigma around scams so that people, you know, report those scams so we have a better idea of how prevalent they are and, you know, to help prevent them more.
Yeah. Peter?
Yeah, and the good news is that there is more reporting each and every year, not only by older people themselves, but by banks, credit unions, financial services, their reporting systems. So we're seeing increases in reports. We know we're also seeing increases in the number of people who are being exploited. But all in all, we are moving the needle. We mm-hmm. don't have the exact data, but we know where the trend is.
I want to talk about something really important with you here, Leslie, and that's the shame that comes with this, right? There's a lot of shame that people feel when they do get scammed or just talking about money at all. How can we cut through that shame?
I think one thing that can help cut through the shame is, you know, having conversations like we're having today and really, you know, letting older individuals know that they are not the only ones
who are happening all around.
Exactly. It's happening to everybody. And there's, you know, the people who are perpetrating the scams, this is what they do for a living. They're really, really good at it. So there's not really, there shouldn't be shame in being scammed. You've just been targeted by someone who is, you know, really good at exploiting vulnerabilities. And the ability and willingness to talk both about what's happening and what happened and about finances in general can help protect individuals.
Mm-hmm. I'd love to hear from you both on this. Some advice for folks that you can share. You first, Peter.
Two things I'll share. One, definitely get caller ID. If you don't recognize the number, don't answer it. Somebody who's really trying to reach you will leave a message. And if it's from a scammer, don't call them back. Number two is have a trusted person that you can talk to before you make any significant financial decisions. And especially if those decisions are someone's trying to hurry you into a decision and make it more urgent, you have to have a fallback to talk to.
That's a really good tip. That's a key piece, too, is the urgency that they create, right? Like, you've got to do this now. We've got to log into your account now. You've got to get your credit card now. Right, Leslie?
Yeah, that's 100% true that there's, like, you know, sort of the notion both of urgency and don't tell anybody. I think a lot of these scams have that component of you have to do this really quick and don't call anybody because we don't want to get them involved. Mm-hmm. So they're trying to isolate the targeted individual from their trusted contacts and trusted institutions.
WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
And now I want to bring another voice into the conversation with us just to understand how this issue impacts Illinois specifically. Stephanie Zimmerman is a Chicago Sun-Times consumer investigations reporter. Welcome back, Stephanie.
Hey, Sasha.
Good to see you. So let's talk local. What protections do we have here in our state?
Yeah, so there is supposed to be a safety net, and that's the Adult Protective Services. That's with the Illinois Department on Aging. But there are some problems with that. The Sun-Times ran an investigation last year by David Jackson of Injustice Watch that really went in depth on this and found that unlike some states where they have in-house teams of people that can do forensic accounting and other kind of investigative work with an eye toward looking at criminality, the Illinois authorities actually contract a lot of this stuff out to about 40 different agencies that have caseworkers. Those folks are supposed to follow up on tips of this type of exploitation, and they do. But what this investigation found was that sometimes those reports kind of go nowhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Dig more into that, the gaps or issues that we've seen.
Right. So this investigation found that those contracted social workers who were supposed to do these, you know, follow up on these cases of purported elder abuse, financial abuse, were only able to verify evidence of abuse in about 5.5% of the cases. And I think it was less than 1% of the cases were referred for criminal investigation to law enforcement. So one of two things is happening. Either they were mostly all false reports, or they're not looking deep enough. And David Jackson had some really heartbreaking examples that point to all of the things that Leslie and Peter were just talking about.
Yeah.
One man was, you know, an elderly man. He lost basically the bulk of his life savings. It was $340,000.
Wow.
To a series of characters that all were professionals, just like Leslie pointed out, these people are very good at what they do. And they befriended him and, you know, and then it was like one request after another. Somebody needed money for a medical procedure or whatever. And and they were just tapping him over and over and over again. And there were numerous instances in which social workers had looked at it, but it seemed like there was some confusion about how far they could go with this, about whether they had the authority to do anything. And they basically would say, well, you know, this man has a right to refuse help from us. He has a civil right to refuse help.
Yeah.
And so they would kind of throw up their hands. And that's the problem.
Yeah, that's an issue for sure. I hear Peter in Michigan. There's a Financial Exploitation Prevention Act. How does that work?
Yes. So led by the Attorney General's office, the Elder Abuse Task Force really worked with the financial industry to get this Financial Exploitation Prevention Act in Michigan in the fall of 2022. And essentially what that does is gives banks and credit unions the opportunity to hold transactions while they're investigated, and to partner with Adult Protective Services, which in Michigan is through the Department of Health and Human Services. It also mandates more training, and I think that's so key, so that people in the banks and credit unions are recognizing financial exploitation earlier.
That is so important. So give us some tools, Peter, that are available to people to avoid scams.
So we created a tool, a financial vulnerability survey, and people can go online to our website, no charge, answer 17 questions, it's all anonymous, and get a sense of how vulnerable they may be to scams. And it really taps into kind of different areas of vulnerability, including psychological vulnerability around money, relationship strain and financial strain, and self-confidence around money.
What's your website?
Our website is olderadultnestegg.com. That's one word, olderadultnestegg.com.
Nice. What resources would you point people to, Leslie?
So a couple of the federal agencies have really informative websites. Two that I would point to are the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, which has some important information on scams, and also the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Both of those agencies have a lot of information about scams, how to report them, what scams are going around on their website, and they have really good high-quality resources.
Anything to add, Stephanie?
Yeah, and I think prevention is really the tool, but if you are somebody who has noticed that something has already happened, a person has been scammed, you know, I would urge that person to continue following on with the Department of Aging, and if they don't get any help there, there is one additional resource here, the Cook County Public Guardian. It's kind of a tool of last resort, but if they can step in if somebody is really being badly financially abused by some of these criminals.
We've been talking with Chicago Sun-Times reporter Stephanie Zimmerman, the Chicago Federal Reserve Bank's Leslie McGranahan, and Peter Lichtenberg of the Institute of Gerontology at Wayne State University. Thank you all so much for joining us.
Thank you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Max Lubers, edited by Meha Ahmed, and mixed by Brenda Ruiz. We discuss solutions to big problems every week, so consider subscribing so that you never miss a conversation. Thanks for listening.
I love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.